man.
All right, let's get into it. Let's get into it. So we got our special guest.
Hold on, we gotta make an adjustment.
That's the best word you come up with special. No kidding. What about that dude?
We have one of the biggest superstars in the game.
Yeah, it's wild, but people be like that.
London.
Last one to the airport buys breakfast. Day one.
Hell yeah, man. Boy, London Brown is in the building.
Yes, sir.
He's in the building.
So you're an actor, comedian, dancer, producer, everything, bro.
You know what? Look, when you black, man, you gotta be able to do some extra stuff, man.
You can't just do one thing.
You can't just do one thing. When you think about Michael Jackson, singer, writer, producer, initially people just think singer, but you gotta have your hands in a few things, man. But you know, humbly, man, that's just God. He gave me this stuff to use and to share and that kind of thing. Because once you realize, man, like, our gifts are not for us anyway.
Right.
So I'm just glad to be a recipient of them.
I love that.
You know?
Yeah, you're right. Our gifts aren't for us. They're for everyone else. It's for entertainment. Man.
But that's why it's always funny when you see people who can't be humble enough to understand that.
Right.
They actually think it's them. It's like, for example, take like a rental car. Like, who flosses in a rental car? Like, it's not yours.
Me.
Right. You know? Well, anyway, but for the sake of the example. No, but you know,
He sees my Instagram on the way here. He's like, oh, I'm bringing this up.
Oh, no, because I seen y'all in y'all your little driveways. I seen what y'all doing, man. I said, give me a couple more seasons. I see what y'all pulling up, man. I ain't say nothing, man. It's real nice.
That's
I know
hilarious.
That much.
No, but you're right. That's actually a really interesting point. I love that. Yeah, it's not for us. It's for the people. Like, oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, so you, what was the first TV, like your kind of first big thing? Obviously, you've been doing stuff for years before Canaan, but.
I'll put it this way. There's what was a big deal for me versus what people may have recognized. But I did a show called The Hustle. Mm-hmm. That was on Fuse Network. Shout out to Prentice Penny. I think he was a showrunner for Insecure.
Right.
With Issa. So when I landed that show, that was just cool because the reason we got picked as a cast was because no one knew us. And that was going to work for the storyline.
Right.
They didn't want to grab someone who had been really working, it wouldn't have worked for the storyline of us being some young artists coming up or whatever.
Right.
So for me, that was, you know, because it's been a minute for y'all though, but think about like those first couple gigs. It's different when you're auditioning, but when you land something, your confidence becomes, it's different.
Right.
And your whole approach after that is just like, because you know, initially sometimes when you start out, you're auditioning and you got the size and you're nervous and you're trying to be. But after you land something, you really just go in there and be like, yo, this is me. Boom. You know, you're going to be off booking everything professional. But you really just be like, yo, I'm putting my best foot forward. And then if it's for me, it's for me. If it's not, it's on. So anyway, I'm very grateful for that project. But then the one I think that got all my stuff out of my mother's garage, was HBO Ballers.
Yes, sir. Ballers.
How was that? How
man, that was cool. It was so many blessings to that because at the time, I didn't have an agent or a manager. Mm-hmm.
How'd you get
that's
that?
Fire.
Dude, I got a call from a buddy of mine. Shout out to Chris Spencer.
He was an actor on that show as well?
He didn't do the show. You may have seen him. I mean, he's just one of those vet comedians and writers.
Oh, Chris Spencer. I know exactly who that is. Yeah, I've seen him at the store a bunch of times.
Right, exactly. Yeah. So he calls to, hey, man, HBO.
The comedy store,
you.
Not the store.
Yes. Yeah, I know. People, be
people are like, oh, the store. The comedy store, it's a...
I was about to say, what store, bro?
Yeah. The comedy store, yeah.
So he gave me a call, say, yo, HBO looking for you. And he just passed my number along to him. I went in audition. My voice was really... It was so hoarse. I remember telling him, I said, man, if you guys can't understand me, let me come back tomorrow and rest my voice. But it went through. So the first thing was that, not having an agent or a manager. The second thing was when I auditioned, I just remember, you know, it was like a 2-month process,
right.
Just the callback and callbacks. I'm still working in the after school program at this time, doing that's my hustle. And then when I booked it, they said, "Yo, would you?" Because initially I was supposed to only be maybe 1 or 2 episodes,
right?
Kind of a thing. But they asked me, say, "Yo, you got the part. Want to make your lead on the show?" That was like the second thing. And then it was like, "Yo, you got to move to Miami." I was like, "Cool," you know. So these things all lined up. And then the next thing was, because the cast, these guys all have been working.
Right.
So my whole thing was, I just wanted to make the character stand out in a way, because I got to establish myself with all these faces. So I began to start making the character really snarky and just annoying.
Dude, you bodied that too. Bro,
dude,
those first 3 episodes, I mean the whole show, but
yeah.
Those first 3 episodes are legit a masterpiece. Like, you, it had me hooked, and your character was so... Have you seen Ballers, Mike?
I've seen a little bit.
You would love that show, bro. It's
dude,
unbelievable.
You know, but because of that, it was important that I made him something and not just...
Another character.
Not just a friend, right. You know, but...
You gotta bring yourself to it, and that's what, you know... takes you out of the just, okay, he's this character. Like, that's kind of what happened with me originally with Power. Like, I was only 1 episode. And
wow.
Then, you know, you bring yourself to it and they go, we could write for this. We like
exactly.
Writing for this.
That was the goal. And so we was writing and creating. I was doing a lot of improvising because, right. Again, I wasn't supposed to be there. So along with those things, I think it's 4 or 5 things, how God just worked it all out. The other thing was, what better place to be as a new face on the scene than all my scenes to be with Dwayne Johnson.
Right,
yeah, that's
so
crazy.
By default, you had to look at me, even if you didn't want to, because you was looking at Dwayne.
Right.
So if you can't be the hero, I was the next to play the villain on that show, if you want to call it that. In season 1, it was just a great look for me.
Right.
So I'm just humbled by the whole thing, man. I know that. I don't take no credit for that, you know, other than just being prepared.
Right.
You know, but God set that up, man.
So they were searching for you because had they seen you do stand-up?
All right, so look, we got to take a little quick time out from the episode because we're out here on the West Coast and we're living our best life in our new crib.
The Money Lion crib,
the
baby!
Money crib. Shout out to Money Lion, you know? All thanks to Money Lion. Now, look, you guys can live your best life, too. You get new sign-ups every day and it all goes towards the money jar. We're giving away up to what? How many?
100 bands! 100 bands!
100 bands.
From Money Lion. Come on. All you have to do is sign up, create your Roar tag, and use the referral code MONEYSIGN.
The crew has it.
To let them know that the boys sent you,
yes.
Okay? Listen, I know it's boring to talk about money, you know, finances, this and that. MoneyLion makes it fun and interesting. You can, you know, from learn how to lease a car, how to create a bank account, everything, their website.
Save. Now look, let me get the money away. Now we got some winners on the list for y'all because we got to get your money.
So we're gonna give away some money, baby. You know, we give our winners away a little extra cash on the side. Michael, who's our first winner right now?
Our first winner is Annalia Walker. Roar tag, Annalia. I don't know why she replaced the A with X. It looks kind of cool, but whatever. You won. How much you won?
She won $175.
$175. That's a good one. You know what I'm saying? Get some kicks. Throw some gas in the whip after that too. You know what I'm saying? You could do a little something with a $175. Shout out to Annalia. So our second winner. Oh, he. Got a little something. Our second winner is
Devone 40, and his Roar tag is
Peso.
Peso.
He's all about the pesos, baby. He's all about the pesos. You got 200 pesos. Shout out to Devone 40.
Our third winner, how much did they win, Mike?
Oh, she won $230.
$230.
Debbie Dela Cruz. Debbie Dela Cruz is her Roar tag. Shout out to you. You won
$230.
$230.
Yeah, I know.
Have a night. Have a time
right now with these gas prices, you could probably fill a quarter of your tanks. Like, think about all the stuff that you could do. Our fourth winner, right here,
Darren Williams.
This
is Roar tag. Darren J. Williams.
Darren J. Williams.
You won $185. I mean, it's not as much as Deadly Crew, she's getting money out there, but you know what I'm saying? We're gonna have to catch up to her. She got the big bucks right now, she's in the lead. But shout out to Darren, you got $185. Go make some shake with that, mama.
Dude, this kind of sucks. Like, we left the money guns in New York, so we're not shooting money everywhere.
I knew
something was missing.
Yeah.
I knew something was missing. Okay, last winner here for $210, we have...
Shantae Knighton.
And her roar tag is?
Shimmery Diva.
I love how I can't read it, so I'm like, and our winner is? I'm going to say everything else. Michael, you have to read it.
Shimmery Diva. You shimmery and shit. You shining and all that. You won $210.
$210. So go claim your prizes, baby.
Go claim the prizes. Go get that money.
Make sure you sign up at moneyline.com. Use the app and use the roar tag. The crew has it for your chance. Listen, we're giving away free money. You get a free show with free money. Like, it's like,
What are we doing? What are we doing? And then at the end of the year, we're giving away $100,000. $100,000. I mean, what? You know, after they hate the boys.
Right.
$100,000 at the end of the year.
Right. It's like, just sign up.
Sign up. Use the referral tag. Who has it?
No, I don't even think they knew I did stand up.
But so Chris was just like,
but
this
I think, I can't remember who's connected. I think maybe Chris Spencer's wife
right.
was around the table of something. And she said, oh, I think my husband kind of a thing. So it's still kind of fuzzy, but it went something like that.
Nice.
Obviously Chris knew I did stand up, but they just knew that he knew me
right.
or could get to me. So it just worked out, man. That was a great situation, yeah. man.
And how long have you been doing stand-up up until that point when Ballers happened?
Man, I felt like maybe 6-7 years, something like that.
Yeah.
So it was just so many things, man, that led up to that. Because even before that, I was touring with Chris Tucker as his feature.
Nice.
And right after we was touring, he decided to fall back on touring. He got into some other things, started working on the film or something.
Right.
So now I'm in this place. This is like 2000. I think maybe 2014 I auditioned for Ballers. But what was wild about that was my first TV show did 6 episodes. So that was airing, but I'm still in after school program.
Yeah.
People didn't understand what you're doing here, but you on TV. They don't understand, like, you ain't working unless you working.
Right.
You know, you get a gig. So that I'm still doing that. 2014 was like my brokest year. I had like $28 in my account. It was just all my stuff was in my mother's garage. It was just rough.
Right.
You know, but the thing I always tell people about or talk to them about is, like, I always live my life in anticipation. Like, I remember finding some free theater classes, acting classes, and I just wanted to just be prepared for it. So by the time, you know, what was good about how all this stuff lined up was when I did that small TV show, The Hustle, I'm a theater guy. So I had to learn, you know, just to know how to play in that frame.
Yeah,
right?
Being on set, hitting your mark, all
of
that stuff. Yeah.
So, you know, I understood the ideas of blocking everything because from theater, but just really know how to play into the frame.
Right.
So I was able to learn. That was my crash course for TV. So by the time Ballers came around, I knew what was up. Then I was like, okay, they got to do a couple more takes. You know, let me, you know, save some of these bits and these jokes for when they cut on me. And, you know, all those sorts of things you just kind of learn. I figured out how to really pull the camera on a set like that. So then by the time the Kanan situation came up, I had fallen into a nice little groove where, you know, sometimes I'm like, okay, let me see. If they, let's just say, y'all know, we cutting over, they getting your stuff. I'm like, they cutting to me? Okay, bet. Some tears.
Yep, exactly. Yeah. You be chilling when it's covered, when the day covers it. You know, turn around.
You know, but I do try to give them their stuff.
Right.
But, you know, but I'm just saying at the same time, you know, those are those things that I learned from just working on, you know, those shows. It just got me ready for this. So by the time this came around, I just really felt, you know, in the groove. And also, those guys are all really great people.
Right.
You know what I mean?
I'm going to take...
You can tell by the character, Marv. You can tell that you be in the groove.
I love it, man.
You can tell you love playing that character, too.
You know,
like, you have hella fun playing Marv.
Dude, it's just that... And this is no knock to the other characters, but the other characters have to really be who they are.
Nah, fuck Makai. No, I'm kidding.
Shout out to Makai.
He was talking so much shit about you before this started.
I love Makai. You know, but these other guys, they can't... I feel like, and again, no shade at all, but meaning like, we don't want to see Rock being goofy or being silly.
We don't want to see her.
She's just what her name is. She's the Rock of that whole situation.
Right.
Same thing with Nick or, you know, with Joy. We don't want to see Joy goofing around too much because he's a villain in this situation.
Right.
And so the difference between those characters and what I like about Marvin is Marvin isn't necessarily in any kind of box. Like, Marvin can hold a gun. He can spill a drink on himself.
Right.
especially in the second season, he can be vulnerable with his daughter. He's crying with her and dealing with all of that. But then he's chilling with the chicks. So he's not so...
We're literally... Brayden and Marvin are, like, so similar, but we don't even know it. Like,
dude, it's one of those things where I just really enjoy Marvin because I get to...
Right.
I felt like some of the other projects, I couldn't stretch. And, right. You know, but I think these writers, and you guys know, the writers, you know, with this whole universe, we got some... They're really good writers, man.
They're so good at making, like making it possible for each character to go through certain, like,
yeah,
range,
man,
of emotions. Not everyone, like, every character, like you said, nobody really wants to see Rock or Unique, you know, be goofy or anything, but it don't mean that they in the box, you know what I'm saying?
Exactly.
They have so many other emotions. That
other things,
through.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that's hats off to the writers for that.
And that's why, that's hard. One thing I do, like, I felt like on Ballers, I felt like the writers really geared the show to Dwayne. And I get it, he's the guy. But the difference between that show and this show is, like you mentioned, they let all of us breathe in our own. Like, you know, people were asking me about the show, and I'll be, and you guys know, like, we shoot out of order. We don't.
Sometimes
I'm not even keeping up with everybody else's storyline because Marvin has his own journey he's doing.
Right.
Because of what you mentioned, the writers know how to do that. Mm-hmm. And as they like us and deal with us, they start to learn our voices and they start writing stuff for us,
right?
And that's what's really cool is that shout out to Sasha Penn for that.
He's
kind of
the
stuff.
Man, bro. I love Sasha.
He's good dude.
Sasha, yeah. Go hard for the boys too. Shout out to Sasha.
Yeah, he's good dude, man.
I love that. I love that. So you were on tour with Chris Tucker. What was that like? Was it crazy?
Tour
was
life.
It? Was it? Were you kind of like
tour like?
No, you know what? But it's not like, you got to think. It ain't like Kevin Hart and his boys,
right? Mm.
This is Chris Tucker, the big brother. And I'm a student,
right,
full-on
right.
student. Actually, by the time I started touring with Chris, I had been doing stand-up like a year and a half. So we just kind of clicked, but it was really just me being a student. That meant he needed me to, you know, carry his bags.
Yeah, your opener. That's kind of how it goes,
record
right.
Record his set,
right.
Cut his hair, drive him around. I was cool with that.
Right.
You know, no ego there. I was there to learn.
Right.
And just, you know, and that kind of thing. So that when it was time for me to go out and headline, I learned some things from him. Like, you know, I brought one of my boys.
Right.
And, you know, and paid him whatever little I could give him out of whatever I was doing.
Right.
But just understanding how to treat people. He's always told me, you know, to stay humble, be focused, and keep God first. And so I just spoke to him yesterday, man, and I just appreciate him just being open, even talk to me.
Right.
You know what I mean? As a guy who's been doing it, he ain't got to call me.
Right.
But it's cool that he was solid for that, man.
Yeah.
He helped me to get through that period before I landed Ballers.
Nice.
So, you know, people that can be cool enough to help you eat,
right,
you got to respect him, man.
Yeah, bro. I'm such a
especially
big Chris Tucker, man.
Like, you know, Chris Tucker, like, that's a legend right there.
Man. Yeah, man.
That's
absolutely.
Yeah.
That's dope. That's so. So then you did Ballers, and then in between, were you working on other stuff? Were you looking for other projects? Were you focusing on stand-up before Kanan happened? Like, what was that in-between period
The period was actually really short, blessingly. I got so many of these, that's why I love doing these podcasts and different things, because I have so many of these stories that people got to just hear.
Right.
But I'll give you this one. So after I landed my first TV show, my agent at the time, they wanted me to go, like, do a beer commercial or something. And I was just like, yo, I was like, I didn't really think that was my lane.
Right.
Not that I have a problem with, you know, drinking it as a character in the show, but at the time I was still working with kids. Mm. My stepfather, you know, alcoholic, so I know what drinking does. So
right.
I didn't want to, that wasn't just what my lane.
Right.
So I was like, no, I don't think I want to do that. They got really been out of shape to the point where they said, man, you know, you're lucky we even want to represent you. I said, exactly. I said, whoa, okay, that didn't feel right. So I remember
I pumped your brakes
right on there. I spoke to Chris about it and his lawyer. He said, man, they kept it real simple. He said, man, I wrote a one line. Thank you for your services. They're no longer needed. That was the end of that. Broke away from that.
Yeah.
So that's why I was agentless at the time. But what's wild about that sort of thing, man, is that, again, when I finished Ballers, so that's my first agent story. So when I finished Ballers, I kind of got, and I was with one of the large ones, I'll say it that way. So I got the call.
Who is it, WMACA?
I may have to circle back with them or something. Maybe that guy just didn't care. You know, but so what I got one of these calls, which was, hey, man, how's it going? I said, yo, everything cool, work I'm doing. I said, yeah, yeah, okay, nice. Hey, listen, man, just want to let you know, man, I think we're maybe too big of an agency for you, man. We probably should just find something smaller. I said, oh, this is that call. I said, okay, well, cool. No worries.
Right.
I'm not that guy. I don't. First of all, I don't put my trust in man anyway. I don't. People so fickle. They so up and down. I
trust God.
After you be let down so many times, you be like,
all right, whatever.
God deal with God, man. So he runs all this stuff for me. So I was like, it's no problem. My manager calls. She was like, yo, don't worry. We'll find somebody. Don't even worry about that.
Right.
So in between that fall of 2019, this was like September, between September and Christmas.
Right.
I get a call from Robbie Reed. She was like, hey, we're doing American Soul. This is the story of Non Cornelius Soul Train on. She's like, yo, you want to come play Boosie? Boosie Collins? I was like, yeah, I'll buy it. So I'm going to go down there. We shoot for a week or whatever it is. I do the episode and learn the bass and learn a little lick or whatever it is. Then I go to Winnipeg, Canada, and shoot a horror film sort of a thing.
Yeah.
So those two little gigs kept me in the mix. And then shout out to my Jason, my agent, Jason. My manager said, yo, we got this agent wants to meet you. He's familiar with the work. I said, cool. And we sat down for 10 minutes. And he said, yo, man, here go. Here's an audition for you. It said Power. Now, mind you, I thought, let me explain. In my brain, I said, Power, I've been seeing the ads all over Times Square. Power is done.
Right.
So I said, well, maybe this is just a mock title. You know, because sometimes, you know, it'll trick the title. And
right, right.
So I was like, okay, well, I said, maybe I just want to see, I don't know. But I just said, well, I'm auditioning for Power because it's done. I do the audition. Let's say that was December. January, they say, hey, you got the part or whatever. I fly out to New York. I still didn't even know I was part of the universe.
Right.
Because then
they went so from... secret. They so secretive with
you. Bro, you don't even know. So then it was that.
Courtney like opens the door. She's like,
you don't know.
We're going to take a quick break from the episode for our new sponsor, baby! Support for today's episode comes from True Classic. I don't know why I sound like a wrestler. This brand new sponsor has the absolute best fitting t-shirts a man can buy.
Listen, baby, we excited, all right? We excited because, look, finding the right t-shirt is incredibly frustrating. It's either too big, too tight, too boxy, like, you know, too tight in your stomach, make you look a little fat, whatever, get you a little pudge. Like, we're not in high school anymore. It's time to upgrade.
Yes, almost all men's t-shirts are designed to look good on skinny models with six-packs. Fuck them, you know what I mean? It's like, what about for us regular people? But most of us aren't packing heat and anything but a few beers. You know me? You know, a little below average. You know what I'm talking about, okay? You are wearing the wrong clothes, Michael. What should we be wearing?
Listen, you should be wearing True Classic tees, baby. Look, they taper off towards the bottom, but they fit together around the chest, you know what I'm saying? The shoulders make you look a little stocky, you know what I'm saying? It's time to highlight the best attributes. With a t-shirt, you can always confidently throw on. Hey, listen, look. True Classic, they don't just stop at their tees, all right?
Nope.
They are your one-stop shop for men's essentials. Super easy and simple to fill out your wardrobe. From polos to workout shirts with the same flattering fit to boxer briefs designed with a pouch to keep your balls nice and comfortable.
So, Mike, they have this dope pack builder on their website where you can custom bundle all of their essential products and save even more when you discount with our offer today. The boys are always giving you offers.
Listen, we saving y'all money and we giving y'all money. Hey, look, this is for the big boys out there. You know what I'm saying? They got a long body option for the tall guys. You know, if you look like fucking Slenderman and shit, get the tall, you know, tall option, you know, long fit. You could order up to triple XL on their staple colors, whether you have abs or flabs. Listen, their clothes look great on all body types. But look, it's about time you learn how to dress yourself properly, man. Like, it's 2022. Look, upgrade your wardrobe with True Classic. Get 25% off at trueclassic.com with our code CREW.
And free shipping, including on all purchases over $100.
You know how the boys feel about shipping.
Man. Except if you're buying merch. We do actually charge shipping on that. But back to the ad. 100% risk-free guarantee with a 30-day return policy. Stay classy with True Classic. Your dad bod will thank you.
So I'm looking at that. Now, mind you, also, it went from the size being called Power. Then it was something called Raising Canaan. So I still don't know.
Right.
And then let me give you this one. I never watched Power at all. Mm. Not because I didn't want to. At the time, I was on Ballers. So when I would run to people on the street, they were big fans of Power, Game of Thrones, and it was Ballers, whatever. So I was like, man, my whole thing was, I said, man, it'd be great to be on that show, Power. Because they was the streets love power.
Yeah, bro. So that was crazy. Like,
man.
You know how it is now.
But. I was like, I love ballers, and I'm grateful.
Right.
I'm working. But I said, man, I can't even watch the show. I said, damn, they killing it over there. Right. I ain't even, so then I didn't watch it. So when the show came about, I had no idea about any of the Power Universe, anything of nothing. Mm. So I didn't really even know that I was part of what I was a part of until after like a month after we shot like the first episode.
Damn.
Then I was like, oh, this is a, we're part of all of them. Because the Power situation wraps around the corner. So I was like, hey. All right, this is pretty good. I mean, it really is a really dope thing to be a part of, you know, because the legacy is just, it's cemented, bro. It ain't,
right.
You cannot mention, can't deny. You cannot right. not mention Power.
Bro,
you
know? it's crazy. There's so many shows and now, like, I don't know. I'm so grateful.
You
know, like,
the show created so many links for so many people, bro. Right. Like, it's
and unreal. It's and think about it. It's just starting.
Yeah.
Wow. It is just starting.
When you think of it, bro, yeah, y'all literally only in season two. Like,
two, we're in three. Fours is starting two. Like, it's just really just starting. Power was the original flagship.
Really, it's a really great situation. Because, like you mentioned, with a show like this, that's why people, at the end of the day, you know, whatever people feel about 50 and the trolling and all, I'm like, you got to give it up to him, man.
Right.
You got to respect this whole situation and the brainchild behind this. And even if he's not, let's say, the writer or this, that, or the third, the brain that it takes to organize and get everybody around you that can do it, and set the orchestration of the whole thing, and everybody that's in Courtney and Sasha and everybody else, it's a really...
It's tough.
Blessing situation to be a part of.
It's so funny because usually when a season is airing of Power, 50 gets in a beef with someone, but season two of Raising Kanan just aired and he just rekindled his relationship with Floyd. So you're like, maybe 50's turning a new leaf.
I saw that.
I thought it was a joke.
I thought it was too.
It's not.
Oh, okay.
They're legitimately cool again.
Coming to, he going to Tycoon.
Yeah, he's going to Tycoon weekend.
But then I thought it was old. That's how it threw me. I thought it was old, then I thought it was fake. I didn't know.
Nah, he went on The Breakfast Club, and apparently he said that he went to a stand-up show of Monique, and Floyd, the Money Team were all there, and 50 was there, and she did like 10 minutes where she was like, man, why aren't you guys like cool? Like, what? And then that's kind of what started the conversation. Isn't
shout
that crazy?
Out to Monique. Shout out Monique.
Yeah, shout out
shout
Monique.
Out to Monique.
That's crazy.
That's super tough.
Yeah.
So now, like, all right, so you into the universe now. You into, you know, filming. Like,
wait, back up. I want to hear the audition story.
Yeah.
I like to go, like.
Yeah, that is true. That
okay.
Is true. You got to hit the ground.
Yeah, and then ask your question.
Because those stories always give me the chill.
Right, because everyone's is always different. Mm-hmm. So.
I do got an audition story.
Yes! Everyone does, bro. Everyone has a Power audition story.
So first, I submitted the tape. That was before Christmas. And then, like, January 1st or something, this is now my second time meeting this agent early on.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, well, let me walk you through the office. And I'm meeting everybody that's a part of his agency. And then in the middle of meeting one of the people at the desk, they're like, oh, yeah, by the way, you got a callback. I was like, okay, cool. You know, even people don't understand, even just a callback, just kind of settle. Because the first auditions that is the nerves, but a callback just lets you know at least you're in the ball.
Yeah, at least they watch you or
they
something.
Watch they watch something going on. Yeah, so all of that is encouraging.
I'm actually curious, do you wear the same outfit for the callback?
Do I wear the...
I always wear the same fit for the callback because I'm like, they liked what they saw. I don't know if it was this purple shirt or not.
Hilarious.
But I always wear the same fit for the callback. So that's a little tip from your boy.
That is pretty smart. I never thought of that. That's pretty smart.
I always wear the same fit, everything. The same underwear. I'm like, damn, show a little.
That's pretty. I never thought of that.
Subconsciously just make the decision. Like,
right.
Yeah, they wouldn't even notice that, like, it's the shirt that you wore from back in the first call.
Everything I've ever booked, I've reworn the same clothes.
That's
wow.
I'm sorry, go on.
No, you good. So I just, I do the auditions. Then I finally get a chance to go to Gower Studios. Now, mind you, I had prepared three episodes. Fortunately, and I don't really know who this was exactly, but fortunately, one of the actors made a choice in his audition to yell the fourth scene. So I recognized the first couple lines. I was like, okay, doing that. And I'm still going over my stuff. And then I hear him read. Like I said, the fourth scene, I'm like, I don't know what that is. So I'm scrolling through. I said, oh, shoot, Marvin got, there's a whole other scene I didn't prepare for. I go into the audition, this is Sasha Penn and a couple other people, and I just told him, I said, yo, I just realized this is the fourth scene I didn't get. Can I take a moment? He said, yeah, go take a moment. So I went in there, went outside in the parking lot, just learned the lines and came back. Point is, thank goodness that actor made that choice to yell all the lines.
Right.
And that was his dynamic to for whatever he was going for.
Right.
But because he yelled, I was able to know what was going on. But and also shout out to Christy Lofton. Christy Lofton.
My guy.
That boy.
I love Chris, bro. He's the warmest, nicest human being, bro.
Yeah, we Chris, met on the set of Ballers. We didn't have any scenes together, but he came up there on the day that I was shooting, and we just been cool ever since.
Yeah.
And the thing about that was, I'm so happy for him, is when I think he was just leaving the audition when I was getting there, something like that.
For Raising Kanan. Chris Lofton plays Gernard on Force, just so everyone knows. Yeah.
So we ran into each other, and I was hoping it would have been dope for us to both be brothers on the show, just because I know he had been wanting to land, be a series regular. And he was super cool. We already knew each other. So I was like, man, that might be cool with the dynamics. But they went into another direction. Shout out to Malcolm Mays. But the point is, the fact that it turned around, he landed Force. What's his brother's name on the show?
I can't remember.
Those two, they look alike.
They dead ass do look alike.
So I'm just really glad.
Everything was meant to happen the way it happened.
But listen, just like we always say, bro, they always gonna keep you in the back of their mind. So even though they didn't pick up Chris for book three, they picked him up for book four.
And it was a better fit for him.
I feel like book four was a great.
They shoot in Chicago. He's from Chicago.
I went out there. He's like, yo, anything you need, nigga, hit me.
I bet. Yes.
Anything. I was like,
I love that. Yeah. All right, so that's your. So what was your next question?
Well, my question was like, cause you from the West Coast.
Yeah.
So like, you know, you locked into a older era of New York. Like, how was that? You know, just being in New York in the what is it, 80s or 90s?
I don't know. 90s, 91. You know, I'm a fan of the 90s anyway. So, you know, there's always some Nas and some stuff like that playing. The whole thing with that. My whole thing was just making sure we carried the accent and the vernacular and all that kind of stuff, the phonetics.
Y'all do a great fucking job doing that.
Bro, you know,
do a great job.
It was, we shout out to Doug. We got our vocal coach, dialect coach, is just, he nitpicks it to a T. And you, when you look at him, he just looks like a white guy just
right.
who deals with some sort of, he looks like maybe a high school professor of some sort.
Right.
But when I tell you, he knows those words, man, and how to really, he breaks, I mean,
that's so funny thing about it. He's got his glasses.
Yeah,
he's
right.
Like, you actually can't say bet or facts here because that wasn't originated until.
he's cold. He looks that way, but he's super, super cool, and he knows the stuff, man. Like word for word.
He's on set every day.
He's on set. He was on set mostly every day, and then he had to like return to some other project that he did. But we would call him. We would Zoom.
Right.
He really helped because I had an idea of the accent because I would do this on stage. I do this Denzel Washington bit where I talk about things that might. What's the bit? Have this bit is about if Denzel Washington wasn't an Oscar winner, but if he was just if Denzel was a guy, basically the bit is on stage. Sometimes the audiences they're a little tight, you know, they want to laugh because whatever. They're
right.
Just, but the bit is if Denzel Washington wasn't an Oscar winner, but he had a regular job, the audience y'all wouldn't treat you would treat him differently if he was just a regular. So it goes into if he worked at a McDonald's, ma'am, can I take your order? You know, whatever that is.
You know,
and it's that sort of thing.
That
so,
shit is crazy.
So my dialect kind of came from that because of doing Washington and Quarters, and he's from Mount Vernon.
Right.
So I had an idea of the accent, but when I really got on
that's
set,
point.
You know, Doug, the coach, man, he was able to help us figure out and just even understand how to just to pull the words in and just mush the word, all that little stuff. He just really helped.
Fact.
And then I'm watching Makai too, even as he's grown. Cause like first episode, everyone's trying to get their footing.
Right.
Yeah.
But then by the time we get into second episode, I'm looking at Makai. Makai is like, he got that whole jaw, right. 50 mm-hmm. must on the worst thing, yep. And even with everybody else.
That shit is so cool to me, bro. Like, that shit is fire.
Yeah, that's what excites me as an actor.
Yeah, bro.
Like, having to do stuff like that. Like,
yeah. You just gotta copy a whole another character that has already been cemented. And like, and it's not even like you're playing him age that he was seen at. You're playing a younger version of him. So it's like, it's something they never seen before.
So it's technically something that you have to match in a way, but also make it your own.
Yeah, because there's nothing really there to match because he's a way different age in the eyes of the people.
That's the thing. That's why with these characters, everybody had their own set of homework to do. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, just, you know, because when I first met Malcolm, he was talking to me in the New York dialect. So I thought he was from there.
Yeah.
He did it in Symphony too. Symphony, a British dude. The Rocks.
I love Toby. Yeah.
Toby, I'm great like, guy. I remember when he first spoke, I'm gonna say English. When he first spoke in his accent, I was like, yo.
Yeah.
Had no, but that was good. He sold us on it. You know.
So where is Malcolm from? I really thought he was from New York.
No, he's from the West Coast.
Where?
Yeah. We both from LA. Yeah.
I thought he was from New York.
Damn.
He looked like a New York nigga.
Yeah, he carried it, so.
Yeah.
But like I said, if you catch him totally away from anything power, he definitely represents the West Coast.
Yeah.
He gonna do that, yeah.
Are there any like stories from season one, like filming or shooting, anything like that? Because you guys did shoot post-pandemic, right? So guys, we're going to take a break from the episode and we're going to talk to you real quick about men's health. Obviously, I'm in the new studio. Michael's not here. I came in today to talk to you about our friends at Blue Chew. So did you know that 1 in 10 men have ED? And 1 in 2 men on the crew has it, have it as well. But we're not going to talk about that. It's all about confidence, right? And when it's time, you know, to do the business, sometimes stress, anxiety, or a bad day can affect your performance and ruin the mood, the fun, everything for both of you. And nobody wants that. BlueChew.com is coming to you to the rescue. It's a unique online service that delivers the same active ingredients as Viagra and Cialis, but in chewable form and at the fraction of the cost. So listen, Blue Chew's tablets help men achieve their full potential. You guys know I like my drive-by ads. Full potential in the bedroom and combat all forms of ED. Because BlueChew.com is an online prescription service, there are no visits to the doctor's office. There are no waiting in line at the pharmacy. You don't got to go in there to get laundry detergent and also a little assistance in the bedroom. You can do that discreetly, and it comes to your door in a discreet package. You know what I mean? The process is simple. Sign up at BlueChew.com and consult with one of their licensed medical providers. They're licensed. It's not just some random guy in a van that's selling you pills. You know what I mean? I've done that before. BlueChew.com, baby. You'll receive your prescription within days. And the best part, online. BlueChew's licensed medical providers work with you to find the right ingredient and strength for your prescription. No pun intended. Strength, width, length. You got it. Don't like swallowing pills? No problem here. Blue Chew's tablets are chewable, or you can just throw it in the protein shake in the morning like I do to get the day going. Blue Chew's tablets are made in the USA, and they prepare and ship direct, so it's cheaper than a pharmacy. And here's a special deal for our listeners. Try Blue Chew free when you use our promo code CREW at checkout. I don't know why I'm yelling at you like I'm Gary Vee. Just pay $5 in shipping. That's it. Again, that's BlueChew.com. Promo code CREW to receive your first month free and some assistance, baby. Dave, are they putting the Blue Chew in my car? Oh, we're still rolling? All right, BlueChew.com, promo code CREW. Put in my trunk. Back to the episode.
Yeah. We did... With pandemic was... We did... February was shut down. We picked back up.
One episode.
Yeah, one episode. Right, we picked back up the fall.
Right.
So it was, the city was still fairly shut down.
Yeah.
But as far as stories, I just know for me, I just felt like, okay, here's one.
He's like, I don't know if I can say that.
Well, I don't know if this is a set one, but for me, I was living in Harlem, so I was walking these blocks every day.
That's a perfect place to be when you filming a show.
Right.
I was in the mix. Mm-hmm. And so for me, I just wanted to be around
The culture,
the streets, and just black people and the whole thing. So I remember I was walking every day, and nobody, you know, this before the show came out. So when the show came out, I remember one time passing these group of dudes, these like corner boy dudes. And first of all, I didn't know I stayed a block away from the project.
Right.
Like the stinking Lincoln projects was like behind me, but I didn't know. I'm used to the hood, right. So that was whatever. But I remember passing these dudes on one day, and it was like, yo, I think that's dude from the show. I can hear him. So I turned back and I was like, you know, thank you, man, for watching the show. Oh, man, you killing on the show, man. You got a pass now. Like, how long have y'all niggas been thinking to rob me? I've been walking these streets. I was like, where'd this come from? You know, but Harlem showed me a lot of love, man. The streets was cool. They was good to me, man. They show. But then I also got, I was walking home a couple times. I see dudes. Hey, yo, you know Marvin is about me.
I'm the, oh yeah, yo, forget it.
Give my number to 50. Tell him he need to write me a check.
Yeah, I was doing this for real.
People really be, you know. And then of course, and then after that, there was an episode with the jukebox stuff. The people really was fussy about that and coming up to me. You only be hitting your daughter like that. I'm like, listen.
That scene is actually crazy. How was it filming that scene? Like,
bro, it was
getting
draining.
Into the emotion. Yeah, I'm sure.
It was draining. And then, honestly, I didn't know if the writers were just trying to dramatize the story.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
I just checked with my friend, my LBGT friend. I was like, yo, is this legit or like what? And they told me, it was like, man, definitely, you know, when the kids come out to their parents, it's a whole big thing. And then we all... also considered time period.
Right.
It's 91.
Yeah, back in the day. Like, what?
Yeah. And Marvin today is different. Marvin is an old school kind of a dude. He didn't even know what to call her. I think he called her like a Lebanese or something. He didn't even know. He just, you know, Marvin, that's why people got to enjoy this second season when we get to see Marvin go through his therapy. But the whole thing was, it was just really draining because Haley and I, we didn't talk before.
Shout out Haley.
Shout out to HK. And we didn't talk before, so... You know, I purposely stayed a distance from her. I don't know if she knew that necessarily, but we didn't really, the way the scenes were set up.
Right.
In addition to me laying low. So it was awkward, and not awkward, but like the fact that we didn't really know each other fit well with the story.
Right. Mm.
And so it was really us just trusting each other. And she brought what she needed to bring. We had a good fight coordinator, and it was just draining because it was just emotional. And, you know, like we talked about, those takes, is take the, you know, you want to make sure you're giving it up each take.
Yeah. Was it Rory? Was it Rory, Rory Bratter, the fight coordinator?
Was it? No, I don't know.
We like to shout out the crew here. Yeah.
Yeah, major shout out to them for sure. I don't know. He was a white boy, bald head.
Yeah. That's
Chaz.
Chaz.
Yeah. That's what it was. Chaz.
Shout out to Chaz.
Yeah, shout out Chaz.
Yes.
Rory.
Okay. Man, my fault, Rory. Rory sounded like a white name. So I had to think about, like, what white dude?
Nah, Rory the man.
Rory is the Rory.
Who directed that episode?
Oh, that was, he was with you, I think he's with you guys. Or he's a producer. I can't think of his
name.
Yes,
Bart.
I think that's Bart.
I did not know Bart directed that episode. That's crazy.
Yeah,
shout out Bart.
He directed on Kanan. I didn't know he was directed.
Yeah, I didn't know that either. That's awesome.
Yeah, he did. He did that. Absolutely. Yeah. Nice. He like his takes.
Oh, I was just about to say, y'all was there for a minute, wasn't ya?
Yeah, I think we came in on a Monday and then left on a Thursday.
How many takes?
Bart's
gonna love that.
We love
it. And by that time, that's when we really started acting. We just, when it came for the crime, we were like, we just, okay, now we acting.
Right.
We had to act at that point because we got no more left, man. We
You know what's so funny is I heard a story. So David Fincher is like obviously one of the greatest directors of all time. He does like 80, 90 takes or something. So every actor that's worked with him says, 1 through like 15 is crisp. Mm. 15 through 70 is a nightmare. Mm. And then 70 through 90, something happens where everything is like absolutely like flawless and locked in. I can't imagine doing 90 takes.
I can't imagine doing 90 takes.
Because we'll do like 4 and I'm like, are we done with this?
I can't imagine doing 90 takes. Right. So I'll be like...
Right. Michael will literally like get it in one. He'll be like, let's move on. Like, we got it.
Like, let's get it. Like, we could do one more for safety, but I think this was the one.
Right.
That's the thing. That's the thing is that, well, one thing that happens is you're definitely off book by the time you finish it. Like, it's take after take. Mm-hmm. But yeah, at some point, we just be like, all right, let's, you know. But also, I think every director, we deal with so many different directors on the show. So many different styles. Like, sometimes... Like, shout out to Mario Van Peebles, man. Mario, for those who don't know, creator and writer and director of New Jack City. You know, with Mario, he because he's an actor, the communication is different. Sometimes they know how to, you know, certain directors may not need to do as many takes because they know how to vocalize what it is they want.
Their notes pull out certain things.
And they're able to say, give me a little this and that. And you're like, okay.
And they don't even gotta say too much. It's just like.
They adjust, or we adjust, and we give them what it is they want. So, you know, that's the cool thing about each of these directors. You kind of learn something different, and you learn to trust them, and they pull out a different side of you that you didn't really know. And so.
That's a fact.
His episode was probably one of my, it was one of my favorites because I had my Denzel moment. at the end of that season, or when I'm taking vengeance back on Neek for just about killing my brother in the burning building, and I get to get out the van with the Thule, and I'm out there. That's just, and it was slow motion. That's just my, that's like my favorite.
Right.
Shout out to Denzel. That's my personal version of Denzel. Just like. Out the gun. Right. It's just cool. That's
I know. All. Sometimes you shoot something and you like see it and you're like,
ain't no way I just did this.
Right.
Shit.
It was for me personally, the robbery scene with Kane. I was like, oh my God, this shit was crazy. Yeah. What was the one that you said that you when you went and seen Tommy when Many Men started playing?
Yes. That scene is hard, bro. When I'm posted up at his car, I got the good Amiri fit on. I got the Amiri on. Right. I'm posting up. No, was it Amiri? It was
McQueen. Because it was the Skulls.
Yeah. I had the McQueen on. I was posted up on the Mustang or the Camaro. I think it's a Camaro.
It was sleek.
It was sleek. And then the 50 song just fades in. I'm like, man. Damn. Oh, it's crazy. I'm like,
first of all, I got to give y'all a shout out.
I didn't
say
nothing in that scene. I was just like, damn, this shit fire.
I got to give you a shout out, man. That it was crazy. I was thinking about this when I saw when your billboard dropped in Times Square. Mm. I was like, I said, it has to be wild, dude, to see your face. Like, you know, because we on the billboard and stuff like that throughout the city.
Yeah, you want Sunset.
But,
yeah.
So I haven't seen it yet, but I haven't been over there.
Go to Saddle Ranch.
The second ours comes out, it's right at Saddle Ranch. You know Saddle Ranch Shop House?
Yeah, dude, the club's right there.
If you eat outside, you are literally looking at your face right there. When our billboard comes out in 4 months, if you think I'm not taking every girl I know to Saddle Ranch every night, I'm like, this table is reserved for the next 3 months because my face is right there.
She got to sit on this side.
You got to sit on this side.
She'd be like, wait, is that you? I'm like, oh, I had no idea.
it's a clean look. So when I saw the image, I said, man, they it was a nice look in Times Square, man.
Especially for someone like me, being from New York, like being in Times Square all the time, like damn, like I'm little, I see all the lights, like damn, this place is unreal, it's beautiful. And then I grow up and then like I see my face in that same exact place.
It's crazy. It's just like, and you've been there for years.
Yeah, it's been like years. Two, three years.
For season six, they had his whole face wrapped around it.
That's what I'm saying. That wraparound is crazy.
It's crazy. Yeah, it's crazy. We had one in Times Square for season two, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. But Mike has had some big crazy ones where I'm like, yeah. So, and he'll be like, yeah, it's cool. And I'm like, Mike, your face is all over the subway stations.
Nah, you know what's mad funny? The one time I flipped out when I seen my own face, I was on the way back from Posh. I was on the way back from Reef Shop, right?
Right.
And I'm making the left turn to get to the crib. And there's a bus stop right there, nigga. And I see my face on the bus stop. Me and Pessy is driving. Pessy's driving. I said, yo, what the fuck? And then Pessy just hits the brakes. He's like, yo, what happened? I'm like, nigga, look. Right. And I'm like, bro, I'm right there. This is right by the crib. Like, this is crazy.
They had a whole video of you shooting the gun and then the bullet
hit
it.
Yes, bro, in time. Yeah, that was crazy.
So crazy.
But yeah seeing my face by the crib, on a bus stop by the crib, that was crazier than Times Square. I don't know why, bro, but like, I just stopped. I was like, oh, shit. And then Pessy was like, what the fuck happened? I'm like, look, bro, that's me right there.
I took a flick right under mine. It's literally the profile picture on every dating app I've ever been on.
Ah, hilarious. I get it. I mean, it is dope, it's man. It's wild because sometimes I remember looking at the billboards and thinking, man, how dope is that? Like,
right.
To be out there like that in that sort of way is dope, man. It's a nice feat, man.
I love that. And so now we can get into a little season two stuff. So by the time this episode will come out, episode one and two will have aired.
Episode one was fire.
Oh, thanks, man.
That shit was lit.
Yeah. Is there anything specific in the first couple episodes that like you wanted to talk about, or any like things that you remember that you're like?
You know, I think just the whole thing with, at least with my character, Marvin, is that people are trying to figure out how is he going to repair this relationship with his daughter from season one. And because also I think people got to understand, when we got into that scene, when Marvin and his daughter got into that altercation, they got to understand it wasn't like Marvin got into that fight, and then went in the living room to watch the game. Right. Like, he was really broken down by that.
Right.
And so I'm glad that people get to see Marvin going, doing the therapy thing, because I think a lot of people be needing that sometimes.
Right.
You know, especially with all the mental health issues and everyone, you know, seeking out now. But sometimes, man, people don't realize, I'm like, the fact that you, every time you get mad, you want to punch a wall. Like, bro, you need to get some stuff worked out.
Right.
You know what I mean? So hopefully...
punch the shit out of some more.
Man. So hopefully people watch the episode and right. need that, they'll be able to walk away with them and be like, yo, we like Marvin. I connect with Marvin.
That could be a form of therapy for them.
Man, that's what I'm saying. So hopefully, you know, I think people can look really look forward to that.
Yeah.
And just, again... because season one was such an introduction for everyone. I know people were just like, initially people felt like the first couple of episodes were slow, but they didn't, the audience don't understand, we can't come out just shooting.
Right.
You gotta, what the hell are y'all gonna watch?
You gotta build up.
You gotta learn these characters, be right. invested emotionally.
Because then if someone died, who cares? Yeah. We're shooting, who gives a shit?
Exactly.
Right.
So the writers did really good with just moving the story along in a nice timing. So that now the second season, people will really, I think, care more
right.
about everybody because they know us.
That'd be the best about going into season two. Like, yeah. you got season one out the way, everything is set, and now everybody gets to, like, really
mayhem.
Take on their fucking
And then
cast.
Season three,
And then season three is just like...
our shit about to come out. That shit is crazy. Like,
yeah, well, yeah, finished season three already?
Yeah, we're done.
We wrapped 2 or 3 weeks ago. Yeah. 2 or 3 weeks ago, right?
Yeah. So we'll be a couple, probably, I don't know, after you, a couple months after you, a month after you. We don't really know yet. But it is interesting, though, as actors, like... we don't write the show, but sometimes there is a little protectiveness over a character. Like, sometimes people will be like, why was Marvin abusive to his kid? And you're like, well, I didn't write that, but also, this is why.
Yeah.
Yeah,
which
yeah.
is interesting, because I do that with Brayden.
I had to do that shit a lot with Tariq. I'm like, listen, man, Pops wanted to send me to jail. He wanted to send Mobs to jail. What was the family going to gain out of that?
I feel that. I definitely get it.
Right.
I felt that way, because the whole big thing in season one, people just didn't understand. It was like, man, Marvin, you can't drive. Man, you raking, crashing all these cars.
That was a lot of the fan questions. They're like, ask him why he can't drive.
But listen, that's what I'm about to bring. Now, this is one we can chop up. Look, I got kind of, sometimes I'd be like, I'd be trying not to, I'd be like, some people just don't process properly.
Right.
People act like Marvin was in the parking lot of a Costco just backing up, hitting cars. His nephew was about to be killed. He
right.
Look, when it come to family, Marvin was moving.
Right.
He didn't care what happened to that car. He gonna crash the car and been saving his nephew. He gonna crash the car and been saving his brother.
Right.
It didn't matter. But people gotta understand, he wasn't just, like I said, just driving and just running and stuff. He was being shot at.
Right.
He was trying to shoot back.
There's a lot going on. There's
a lot going on, man. And so people gotta really understand that, like, Marvin, you know, and then also, like I said, we never see Marvin on the bus. So getting another car, flipping
it ain't nothing.
It's nothing, right. bro. Marvin in season one went through 4 cars. One of them was an undercover hoopty type joint. But he went from, I think, a red Benz, a blue Benz, and then a black Porsche.
Oh yeah, nah, he was like, in that shit. He wasn't.
And then the other thing people were talking about, you know, well, why don't he have it? This insurance gonna go sky high. This is 91. Niggas wouldn't think about no paperwork in 91. And he under the table working. Well, people talking about, man, yo, what about your Geico?
Stop. Geico.
Come on, y'all. I need y'all to understand.
He's older than shit.
It's 91. Marvin ain't got no official paperwork in that car. He ain't looking for no. The number's been scratched off.
Right.
Marvin is all kind of stuff in that car. Marvin is not carrying paperwork and not even. He'll burn that car, dump that car.
Right.
People, but if I understand, the audience ain't never been around street people. If they don't know that, then they don't understand.
Do you ask questions on set like that? Like, go up to a writer and be like, because sometimes me and Mike will preempt, I don't know if that's the right word, but like, we'll know what the fans will say. Like, for example, for the Kane and Brayden robbery scene,
yeah,
I'm like, Brayden not wearing a mask? I'm like, the Mike getting killed at the end of season two? Like, why isn't Brayden wearing a mask? And then the writer literally was like, oh no, this is a trap, jewelry store, like, it's not the cops looking for you. It's gonna be guys, you know. So I'm like, oh yeah, okay, whatever, that's fine.
Yeah,
oh, it's owned by like some crooked motherfucker.
Right.
Yeah,
so
it's
not that,
like, an establishment.
That's
it's
still like such a big thing. Be like, why didn't Brayden wear a mask? And they're like, no, it's a trap jewelry store. It's not.
They selling other shit.
Right. That's what I'm saying. Yeah. So do you ever go on set and go, why would Marvin do this, or are you just like put full trust in, or?
No, I'll definitely. A lot of questions came when, again, for the jukebox and Marvin scene. I had a lot of questions to see how legit that was.
Right.
So, yeah, sometimes I will go and try to figure out, because obviously we're trying to get into the writer's heads because they have an idea. So we're just trying to make sure. I ask questions because I try to find out if I'm on the same page. But then also, shout out to Sasha, man. He's also cool with listening.
Right.
You know, that's what I do like, especially with the directors, too. We will sit down and we'll talk. But then also, I think, as you guys know, we start doing the second and third season and whatnot, a lot of times we know these characters very well.
Yeah, right.
Even better than some of these directors, because directors are coming in new.
Correct.
And we know, like, I don't think he would move like that.
We wouldn't say
that. Right, right. He wouldn't move like that. He wouldn't say that. I remember in this season, they had a line where Marvin, like, says, he refers to Jukebox Mom as, like, you know, referred to as a B, and I was like, I don't know Marvin would go that far about right. it. He don't like her, whatever the disagreements are, but he ain't gonna go that far.
Right.
So they trust us.
I like that. I like that. When it's collaborative like
very,
that.
Very, very. Yeah. It's cool. It's super, yeah. super cool. But, you know, it's also okay. respectful, too, you know, as opposed to coming in and, you know, because some cats would do that. I wouldn't do that. I'm like, yo, here's the new script. I got it. And be like, who's the new? Like, yeah, I wrote it. I wrote it on the way in. pass these out. I don't, you know, I respect the lines.
Right.
But they let me play, and, you know, with the lines. But I always, the writer's good. I don't really have, you ain't got to do too much.
Never got to do too much.
Do you find it hard to improv with the 90s writing?
Oh, no, I'm right in there.
I feel like you improv right a lot.
Oh, I do a lot, bro.
I feel but, like you improv a lot.
Also, because, again, some of this come from the theater stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
But as we mentioned, when you know these characters, man, like, I'm in a groove. That's one thing I did like from going from season one to season two. We only had like maybe a month, 3 weeks off, and they picked right back up.
Right.
You know, we didn't have no hiatus.
So you were in that.
Mentally,
you're still in it.
It was draining. Like, to just be
whole year.
Because I really feel alone and out there. Like, I know people out there, but it really, it was pandemic too. I wasn't trying to get sick. It was literally.
That's what you was going
You know, for. Hit the gym, go home, and I'm like, all right, this is my life. I'm working.
Right.
And, you know, between studying and being on set, you're busy. But I knew I when I got back home, I had a whole little breakdown that I never even told anybody. Not like a mental breakdown, but just an emotional one.
Right.
When I got back and I saw my family, and there was a gathering set up for me. And I remember I just was like, whoa. I didn't even know I missed people.
Right.
I didn't know that was even inside. I know now I understand like why people sometimes you watch a reality TV show, a cooking show, whatever, and then they'll be like, you know, since you won this challenge or that challenge, today your mom is here, and people just fold. I didn't understand that.
Right.
But when I had been away that long, I was like, yo, I missed, you know what it was too? Season one, I didn't tell anybody I was on the show. Some people
I didn't
knew,
your family?
My family knew.
Oh yeah.
My core. The right. people that I met with when I returned knew.
Right.
And the thing about it is, I realized that everybody's not happy for you. So I was carrying this thing of this project I had booked, but I didn't say anything because, honestly, I just don't feel like it's a lot of people I can talk to about it.
Right.
Because people don't understand. People get tight. People get jealous. Get all weird and crunchy
maybe
about it.
Maybe think you're trying to shit on them. Maybe think you're
it's
trying
just
to,
too
like...
much, bro. So for me, I just don't talk. So then when I got around people that I realized loved me, they didn't care if I was on the show or not.
Right.
Mm-hmm. It just felt good to be around solid people, bro.
But we're happy for you. So you can come on the Crew as a podcast and talk about
Man.
It because we're happy. No, I'm kidding.
Nah,
but
yeah,
for
it.
Real,
love
though,
it.
Like, it's facts. And I deal with that same exact thing because I live out here and I shoot in New York. So we work enough where we can't travel a lot, but we don't work enough where you're busy all day long. So
it's like
you hit the gym, you're like, oh, cool. All right, I got nothing else to do the rest of the day.
It's here.
You can't do like an acting class or a theater production or this and that because you're like, I don't know where I'm going to be the following Wednesday.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's crazy, bro.
I go through the same thing, bro. It's so interesting.
It's a whole mental thing.
The amount of stuff that you're deprived of when you're filming.
Right.
When you're in that mode and you're in locked in for 6 months, you really don't even notice how much of the shit that you really used to be you're deprived of. But I noticed that when I was in Jamaica not too long ago. I was just on the beach, like, chilling by myself, bro. I'm like,
Right.
Yeah. All I do every single day is speak and respond and answer questions and like speak to people. Like,
you're in a whole thing.
Like, I'm here by myself. I'm on the beach listening. I'm chilling. Then I hear these motherfuckers coming behind me. I'm like, here we go. Yeah. I'm like, here we... Yo, what we doing? What we about to go? I'm like,
he's talking about them, not me.
I'm like, bro, let me just have some peace, bro. Like, you feel me? But not as real, though. Like, I also had another moment like that not too... Like, 3 days ago, I'm just like, damn, like, it's a lot going on, bro. I took a deep-ass breath. I'm like, damn, this is...
Yeah, it's a lot, man. Yeah, like, mentally, the process, like you said, people don't know. You be locked in. It's great for... It's great for the results of the show and the characters and you doing what you do, but mentally, it ain't no joke, man.
Yeah, it's really no joke. Acts. And you don't notice how serious it is because you're just like, damn, I just want to work. I just want to get this and I want it to be the best it can be. So you kind of like put all that shit on the back burner. You just like, whatever, but...
Right on.
But when you're done, it's like, damn, all of this is what I've been deprived of. Like,
yeah. So it is rewarding, you know, when people receive the show, man, and really dig the work.
We appreciate y'all.
Yeah, absolutely, man. That's important.
All right, we'll get you some fan questions in, and we'll get you on out of here.
All right.
So, first question from Snoop underscore is my dog is, what do you think is unique about Marvin that goes over everyone's head, that people don't realize about Marvin? What's unique?
I think that people don't really realize that Marvin is a little bit of everybody. If they really pay attention, that was on purpose. Meaning, when you see Marvin with his gun or doing anything like that, that's a little bit of unique. When you see him being scolded by Rock, that's the Kanan.
Yeah, that's
this Kanan stuff. And when he's being emotionally vulnerable, that's the jukebox stuff. But when Marvin is calling shots throughout the season, that's his strong Rock stuff, you know. So, and then you also got, And you also got, when he's charming with the lady, that's a little bit of Lulu. So Marvin is one character on the show that can kind of float in these different spaces.
I love that.
You know what I mean? And so...
You can't see that, and especially in the beginning of the season, like the first, like, of the show. Like, he was definitely in so many different, like... atmospheres, and he was just navigating through all of that shit.
Yeah. He's a survivor. He's a survivor.
You know? And also, too, because at first... When people first meet Marvin, like season one, they like, oh, he's the uncle that just be messing up and eating. And I know that, you know. So I said, okay, I'm gonna let everybody sleep on him in the first couple episodes.
Right.
But I knew where I wanted to take Marvin and show some other stuff. That's why even with season two, we get to really see some other layers to Marvin. That's my whole thing. I just want to layer Marvin in a way where he's not just the uncle eating. He's more than that, you know what I mean?
But you had me crying that first episode at the premiere. But when you were eating the chips in that hospital scene, the second I saw, I was like, this motherfucker knows his character.
That's a fact. Yeah. He knew the assignment for sure.
And shout out to Sasha, because that was something that I brought to him, was like, yo, I want the character to eat, you know? And again,
did you regret it?
You know,
that's a yes.
I only regret it. I honestly didn't regret it. I just say, people gotta understand, like, when they see the take, they just see that one take, but I gotta eat them chips 27 times.
All day long.
You know?
All day long.
And then this last episode, like this is...
Goes, hey, that's why I was asking. I'm like, I know how it is.
Bro, in this first episode of the second season, I'm outside the courtroom with the glizzy, and you know how crazy that it is. I'm like,
you the glizzy goblin.
I can't say Paul. I gotta just take that on the chin. I'm like, oh, that's take number 47. I wish. That's one thing I said. I can't do that no more. Yeah. It gotta be a cheese sandwich or something else.
Braden had an ice cream cone season one, and I ate like six ice creams that day, and I was like, don't ever write me eating some shit again. I was sick. I was like, I can't do that again.
So now actually what I do is, depending on what the scene is, I'll try to put things, eat food that I can really use. Like it might be some celery or something, you know, or fruit, real, you know, so I can deal with it. So a lot of that stuff, by the time people see what they see, that's the acting. Right. It's looking like I enjoy that food.
Right.
After 28 takes,
For real, though.
You know.
For real, though, bro.
They do a good job at providing the food, but yeah. But that, again, that comes from theater because I just wanted to find ways to to keep Marvin interesting when he didn't have lines.
Right.
And that was just my small way. And I think, like, Malcolm sometimes, he'll chew gum or different things. So everybody got their thing, but I just always enjoy what we call like busy work like that.
Right. Mm, that's a fact. Next question from Chino Nuski 2X. He said, which role does he like more or liked, has he liked more, Reggie or Marvin?
It's definitely Marvin, man. Because like I said, Reggie was cool, man, but I couldn't. Reggie was cool. I did what I could do with that, and I felt like the fact that I like arcing the character. So even season one, Reggie was really annoying and irresponsible and leeching, as people felt. Mm-hmm. But by the end of that season, he became responsible with the funds. So I just like moving characters like that.
Right.
So and I think the writers can feel when we help the characters move that way. So, but it's definitely Marvin for sure.
Marvin just looked fun to play. Like
he's fun, man.
He's funny. He get the girls.
He's fun. All of that. It's great, man. Right. And he's not a slouch either. Mm,
right.
You know, he's not. You know. Hence why he's in anger management classes. The dude will snap. But he if you think about the family, though, this family, they don't really necessarily go around causing problems, but they will respond to them.
Yeah, they solve them.
So even with Marvin's not a mean person, but he will clap back if you get disrespectful.
Right.
And so Marvin's fun, man.
All right, last question before we get you out of here. This is what I want to incorporate every question from now on. If you could play another character in the Power Universe, on original Power, on Ghost, on Force, who would you want to play besides Marvin? Or even Kanan?
But, you know, you say...
any character in the Power Universe that you could play. Like, oh, I wanted to be Ghost. I wanted to do this. Who would you play?
You know what? Maybe, I don't know. Because I like the wardrobe. I like the wardrobe. Because y'all stuff is contemporary.
Yes, sir, Mike. Give me
so the wardrobe. I remember, I think Woody was, I forgot the scene, but he was like under a bridge, a freeway pass.
Yeah, I think he had the Louis Vuitton jacket.
I think black, and it was something. Yeah, I think it was black. I said,
yeah, I think I know what you're talking about. It was
with Monet. I think at your premiere, he had on, either you or him had on like a black or white sweater or something. Mm. And I think I was going to say, I don't know if it was you or Woody, but I was like, the wardrobe. Yeah. I said, ooh.
Yeah.
So I don't know. So maybe I don't know. Maybe something. But then also, I like Ghost got Amari got his stuff was he just strong, man. He just was just
solid.
I mean, like he didn't look like no slouch either. So I like characters that look that are strong like right. that. Just like yo, because I can see the challenge in those.
Powerful.
Things.
He's a powerful for yeah.
It's no pun intended. Yeah, it's a lot of good stuff, man. That, you know, I can appreciate about the show.
Well, hell yeah! So plug your stuff. Obviously, any shows you got coming up? Season 2 of Raising Kanan is out.
Out.
We are in full swing right now.
We're
so
full swing, baby.
Catch up, please, on the Starz app.
Yes, I'm at Real Lyndon Brown, and I'm sure I'm gonna be working some clubs when I get back to New York. So man, come out and enjoy that stuff and.
We gotta come see you.
Yeah, dude. That's why I've been hitting these clubs real heavy since I've been in LA to get back in my groove.
You hit Factory Comedy Store.
Factory Comedy Store, Improv.
Yeah.
I'm in there, bro.
If you hit a show before you go, we want to see you.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, I know, because if I extend this stay, then I'll let y'all know.
Please do.
Yeah,
we'll definitely come out to that.
Yeah, that'd be cool. That'd be super fun.
So yeah, your Instagram, TikTok, anything else?
Yeah, that's you can find me in the Real Lyndon Brown, and also enjoy. London's White Tea Talks. There's a segment on my page where I just break down relationships or whatever. I really break down anything. It's inspirational. It's all that stuff, but those should be fun. I'm going to go to TikTok with those pretty soon.
Hey. Hell yeah.
Mikey?
I know to find me Where's 22 or Michael Rainey Jr. on Instagram. I actually just got access like back to my Michael Rainey Jr. account. I haven't been able to log into that shit for like 3 weeks, 2 weeks, but I'm back. TikTok, Where's 22? If you ever go to Jamaica, Kingston, Catch 22 Lounge, go hit up my lounge. And yeah.
Vlog, subscribe.
Vlog, vlog.
We got to talk about that lounge.
Yeah.
You got a lounge out there.
Yeah, Jamaica, yeah.
Power's been good this week. Power has been good.
Shout out Courtney Kemp.
Come on, Mike. Come on, Power's been real good.
I thought he was talking about like you can catch him on his Instagram account. I thought it was the Instagram name. Nah. No, he's talking about a physical lounge?
Yeah. Restaurant / lounge. Catch 22, 7 Trafalgar Road in Kingston, Jamaica, if you ever take a trip to Jamaica.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Subscribe to the Where Is 22 vlogs. Yeah, we're going to be doing a lot of stuff.
Boys is in the West Coast.
We in LA. Look at the LA
boys
studio.
We're in the West Coast now. We on the new coast. So, yeah, tune into the vlogs. Where's 22 on YouTube?
Yes, sir. At Gianni V. Paolo, Instagram, TikTok.
You have it.
Are you at a million yet?
I'm not at a million on TikTok yet.
Yo, what the fuck is going on? Get him to a million. What are y'all doing, bro? What are y'all doing?
We got London Brown in the building. Thank you so much. We appreciate it. Michael, give us one. Give us an LA one.
Where's the shit?
Oh, right.
Y'all fucking.
Listen, baby, the crew has it. You heard it?
Yes, sir. The crew has it, and you have it. Thank you so much, London.
Man, thank y'all. Appreciate y'all, brother.
Yeah!
That shit was fire.
Bro. We appreciate it.
That's a fire episode. That's a fire episode right
there. Yes, sir. Let me get
you. It has to be. I'm still tripping.